If you like my show, you're going to love Let Lisa Help with Lisa Lampanelli on Podcast One. The Queen of Mean is now the Queen of Meaning. Join Lisa each week as she sits down with a guest co-host to solve their problems, as well as some of her own. Download new episodes of Let Lisa Help with Lisa Lampanelli every week on Apple Podcast and Podcast One. 60 seconds, that's right. That's how long this commercial may last. But you know what else you can do in the minute? Get an offer for your car with True Car. That's right. In just the amount of time it takes to maybe, I don't know, do a few sit-ups or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. And best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. You just go to True Car, simply enter your license plate number, and then watch how your car's details pop right up. Answer some questions, and you get an accurate true cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It is that easy. After that, you bring your car in, they check it out, ask some more questions, and no surprises, they simply give you your check. You leave with the check, or if you want to trade in, you can lock in a trade-in price using True Car for a vehicle on that True Car certified dealer's lot. Of course, the true price, including fees and accessories. And in that case, you come, you get your true cash offer, and you leave with your new ride. And remember, it can be new or used cars from True Car. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. And welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast, everybody. Just keep supporting those people that support us. We can keep doing this thing. Do check out the shows at drdrew.com. I appreciate you going there. Check out After Dark, checking out the Opium series. We did a really interesting thing with the weekly infusion. We put the Opium as an audiobook with some really interesting interviews alongside of that. So do all that for me, and I appreciate it, and sign up for the email list at drdrew.com/contact, and I will be forever grateful. Now it's my privilege to welcome Michelle Miller. She is the Farm Babe. You can find her at thefarmbabe, PABE.com. Twitter and Instagram at thefarmbabe. Facebook, Facebook is / Iowa Farm Babe.
No, just Farm Babe.
And the YouTube channel is Farm Babe. And we got together, go right up against that thing and lower it down. And so it's directly – there you go. She's a weekly columnist for AG Daily. She's a full-time commercial farmer in Iowa, 2,200 acres of corn, soybeans, alfalfa, oats, sheep, and cattle under your solo provisions. How many people work for you?
It's actually – so my boyfriend is a sixth-generation farmer.
Okay.
And so it's the two of us pretty much that do
it. And you're a farmer by generation also? Or?
No, not really. I actually have more of a city background.
Is it because of him that you became a farmer?
Yes.
And you're sort of into the science of farming too.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your training in?
So I actually lived out here in Los Angeles. I'm a FIDM grad.
An
LA fashion girl. Yes, I worked for Gucci in Beverly Hills after college. And then as life may take its twists and turns, I fell in love with a farm boy, and now I live in a town of 1,000 people.
And how did you become the farm babe?
So there was just a lot of misinformation online, and there was another blogger that was going as a similar name, and I was just really fed up with people spreading misinformation about agriculture, whether that's, you know, food labels or the way livestock are treated. And so I just started it as a social media way to tell the story of modern agriculture.
And so you said something on Twitter that caught my attention. Your friend of Kevin Volta, who we did episode 370 with, you asked me, can I go to the show to talk about farming and food label myth busting?
Yes.
Right? And I, for some reason, I responded.
You did. I was so excited.
And I said, well, what are we talking about? What do you mean by that? So let's start with that.
What are we talking about?
What do you mean by myth busting? Because that's kind of what Kevin was doing too a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Yeah. So there are just so many food labels out there. And if I ask people, how many of you are confused by food labels? Pretty much every hand goes up, especially people not involved in our industry. So my goal is to give science a bigger voice in the food and farm space by really connecting farmers and scientists, encouraging people to talk to them about farming and science.
Because, which is what Kevin's deal is.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how we know each other, is because we cross paths at different conferences with public trust communication, science communication.
Now, is Kevin the one that after – he seemed totally legit and very straightforward to me, but then there was all this backlash on social media. He's getting shit about something. I can't even remember what it was anymore.
Yeah, it's
– that he's somehow representing the man or Monsanto or something.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's what some people are like – accusing him of. Yeah, but I mean, really, he's in the public trust space. I mean, he's a science communicator that talks about the benefits of GMOs.
Yeah,
and as a farmer,
oh, right.
I mean,
that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, and so like the anti-GMO crowd right. just give him some slack about
yes.
that, and I really right. wish that they would just be more receptive to what we have to say
and
as farmers, farmers and
farmers
scientists.
Generally.
Yeah, because
well,
I mean,
why do they always run around saying farmers hate this? Farmers, they ruined everything.
Well, we make up 1% of the population, mm-hmm. and a lot of our voices are easily drowned out. A lot of farmers are like an older generation; they're not really big on social media. So you can take like maybe one or two, you know, actors that were in a film or a, you know, a so-called documentary, which aren't always documentaries; they're just used for publicity for different activist groups or whatnot, and then they just take that and run with it. But you know, they're not really listening to the overall message for why are 90 or 95% of corn or soybean growers growing GMO crops?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
why?
We're able to use so much less or safer chemicals overall. And so there's so many myths out there. And
well, see,
so
I know that because I was involved when I was in college. I was involved in sort of raising, remember acid rain? Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
We were fighting that. We were fighting all the algae blooms in the rivers. They're going to be choked off forever.
Oh.
We were never going to have – and all the phosphates come off the farms. We're going to ruin everything.
Yeah.
And then they invented GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And nobody knows that history.
It's yeah, you're right. Thank you for that. It's been amazing to see like – you know, we've been able to do no-till farming, and it's because of GMOs and these different herbicide-tolerant traits that we're able to use substantially less and safer chemicals and no-till farming. And it's just we're reducing erosion and using better sources of – better utilization of fertilizer and nutrients and just being able to grow more crop on less land. And
how do you
really
stay on top of the science?
Preserve. Well, I'm always learning and I'm primarily a keynote speaker. So I travel and speak. I get hired to speak to a lot of different farm events. So I'm always in there with the researchers, with the scientists, with the farmers, and just learning about what's new and what's coming up. So, I mean, that's our business. You know, farmers are always looking for better and more efficient ways to do things.
And did that happen to you because of social media? A public speaking career?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Here I am just starting this blog thinking, oh, I don't know if it'll turn into anything. But now I've been doing it 4.5 years and it's turned into a wonderful full-time career of people really wanting to learn more about how their food is produced.
Well, because part of it – well, first of all, people want to be sort of conscious in their eating, right? They want to not be poisoned and whatever that is. And I think we have a certain amount of – I don't know, maybe I'm overstating this or maybe it's my own personal stuff. We have guilt about eating animals
mm-hmm.
and we don't really understand where it comes from and what is happening and we worry about it. And you say that 99% of farms are family owned by people who care. And this is your words on Twitter to me.
Yes.
And it's not as cruel as many people think.
Absolutely.
So tell me more about
100%.
That. 100%. That's my problem.
Yeah. And that's –
I'm going to see these pictures of chickens going by on gigantic conveyor belts and things.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. There's so many different images out there. And
uh-huh.
I believe people fear what they don't understand. And so what
I – Well, it's almost like, well, that's enough.
Yeah.
All I need to see is that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whatever else is going on, I don't really
yeah.
care.
Yeah. Well, and like science –
oh, wait, here comes Gary.
I'm sorry, but I got to jump in. The one that always got me is why are there laws preventing people from talking about this?
So
like, that's the one that always makes me go, I don't know. Like, I'm fine. I like my hamburgers. Don't get me wrong. I had a giant steak last night.
What are you talking about?
The ag gag laws that prevent people from, you know, a lot of these videos that come out that you see of factory farming, at least this is my understanding. And Michelle, please correct me when I say something horribly ignorant in a second. But to what I've understood from listening to various podcasts is there are laws in place to stop filming and release a video of the way that the big corporate farms do their business.
I see.
So that is a great question, and it's also a pretty big myth. What the so-called ag gag does is ag gag law. Is the slang term for it. It essentially creates rules where you can't lie on your job application to work on a farm. You can't mislead people into doing that. And also, if you do see some sort of cruel footage, you are required by authorities to turn that in right away, right? So rather than sitting on footage for months on end to create a catchy video to ask for donations or convince people to go vegan or whatever that agenda is, what this has done is protected farmers and said, hey, if you see something, say something. Like, if you really love animals, why do you sit there and let the cameras roll? Like, I'm sorry, but if somebody was hitting my cow, I wouldn't be sitting there filming it. I'd be throwing that camera to the ground and going to beat the guy's ass. I can say that, right? Mm-hmm. Sweet. You always got to be careful. This is a family show. Just kidding.
Nope.
But I'd be beating that guy's ass that just hit my cow, you know? And so the thing is they go in and they stage these videos, or they find the one thing that lines up with the agenda of, we got to make this video and say, this is where your bacon comes from. Donate now and go vegan. And it's like, if you don't want to eat meat, don't eat meat. That's cool. We don't care. But just don't mislead people, because what we see as farmers, or what I see, and I try to really talk about more, is the fact that the better we treat livestock, the better they'll treat us. Like, we can't legally sell an animal that's sick or diseased or injured. So everything we do boils down to a really solid science of how do we make sure that these animals are so comfortable, because, and they're healthy, because then we're not using any medications. We're creating a better product with a higher quality, and it ultimately brings the farmer more money. So why would we want, you know what I mean? So that's really what that law is about.
And I think, though, the most people are, you know, as always, we don't think about the average farmer as the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know where the problem is and how big it is. Like, if you're saying 99% of it is not a problem, and that 1% is what we're seeing in those conveyor belts, is that what we're saying?
I don't know how. Like, where did the chickens on conveyor belts come into play? You mean like after they're gassed, like in when they're going to market?
Like, I saw they were live.
What?
They're
like,
I don't know
where this would be and from what and from where.
About Gary?
But
I have seen videos like the ones you're describing. I'll look and see if I can come up with one.
But yeah, I would, I'd be really curious to see like what and where and what context.
What we're even seeing,
because how do we even know like that wasn't from decades ago from another country? I mean, and that's what they're so famous for, is taking and twisting
I'd
this
love
footage.
To know that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of money to be made off of consumer fear and different ideologies. And again, it's like, I don't want to, hashtag not all vegans, right? It's because I don't want to paint a generalized group. But let's say like the very extremists, like the very animal rights extremist groups. I mean, if you go on some of their websites, they are point blank saying like, we will pay you if you find documented like footage of abuse. Mm-hmm. Well, what if abuse doesn't occur?
Right.
I have heard this from numerous sources that they'll say,
it.
Yeah, well, they say, hey, I'll give you $100 if you go hit that cow. You know what I mean? And it's right there in the job description on their website.
Yeah.
So this isn't stuff that's just made up. Like, it's stuff that's out there where it's like their goal is animal liberation. Their goal is to get everybody to stop eating meat. And so these videos that come out, it's like, well, where's that come from? And like, that's not how it works. You know?
Well, there's a weird paradox in with, let's say, cattle, which is that this is a species and subspecies that would not be around much, if at all, if it weren't for the fact that humans grow them and eat them.
Yeah.
It's been extremely productive for that species to have this paradoxical but symbiotic relationship with the human species.
Mm-hmm.
It's made it massively successful as a species.
Yeah.
Even though it's shortened its life expectancy.
Well, and the interesting thing about that too is people think about meat or they think about leather, but they don't think about the hundreds and thousands of other byproducts that we get from livestock.
Such
I
as?
Mean, there is 185 uses for a pig, for example. So you've got life-saving pharmaceuticals, you've got renewable energy, cement, There's little things like cigarette filters and bullets come from pig parts. Like, it's really bizarre, all of these things. There's a great TED Talk out there on the topic. And it's the same with cattle. I mean, every fiber, everything is used, whether that's for adhesives or textiles or musical instrument strings, or sheep's wool is used in carpeting and home insulation. So it's kind of neat when you think about, I mean, I don't know if neat's the right word, but just fascinating to know that no part of any animal goes to waste.
There's a great chef's table on Netflix about a guy that was going to be a veterinarian and was deeply committed to animals and making them well and stuff. And his father was a butcher, and he was sort of objected to it a little bit, but he sort of turned the other way. Then his father died, and he had to run his business. And he's now this master butcher, and he's I don't know if it's made peace. He's developed a deep philosophical attunement to the animals, and that he's part of their life cycle and their sustenance and ultimately their use. And he's developed this way of cooking where every single molecule of the animal is used for the cooking.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
I forget which one it was, but it's France, guys in France.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So in terms of your blogging and your public speaking, what other things are consuming you?
You mean as consuming me, meaning like
– things you want to – you're pushing out now.
Okay. So I'm really passionate about bridging this gap between consumers and farmers, and I want to really –
how did that happen to you?
Consumer fear. Well, you know, like I said, I used to live in LA. And so
Were you one of these people?
I was.
You were a vegan?
Well, I wasn't a vegan, but no. No offense, but I love to hunt and fish and farm and all that
all
stuff.
Right, so you already sort
I was
of
like an anti-GMO activist, you know, like I only bought organic, like I only shopped at Whole Foods. And it wasn't until I met my boyfriend where I learned, you know, here was this guy who was growing GMOs and, you know, was using growth hormones and antibiotics and had cattle feedlots. And it was all this stuff that I was under the impression was...
To defend all that for me.
Right,
all those very topics.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So
go.
When you start learning about it, you just want to share it. So first of all, growth hormones.
Yeah.
When you go to the grocery store and you see that label on a package of chicken that says no added hormones or steroids, if you read the asterisks in the fine print, it says right on there, federal law strictly prohibits the use of hormones in poultry. It does not even exist.
Okay.
You got the other label, antibiotic free. Okay, so first of all, a vast majority of antibiotics are no longer allowed unless you have a prescription from your veterinarian. So
because of an infection.
Yeah, right.
What was it being used for before?
So they used to use them more prophylactically or for for growth promoting purposes, where they were just put in the water or the feed.
Growth promoting.
Yeah, so that used
antibiotics
to be
make them grow.
There used to be a thing that did that. Yeah, but all that has been phased out and it's no longer allowed as of 2017. So even if you look at some of the largest meat companies out there, it'll say right on there, no antibiotics ever, which is it's something to be celebrated. There is definitely a place for responsible antibiotic use because we always have to put the animal welfare first. But if antibiotics are used, by law, they have to go through a withdrawal period before they can legally go to market, which means that all meat is antibiotic free. So there's plenty of time for that residue to leave the animal system. So like everything is antibiotic free.
Okay.
So it drives us crazy in agriculture because, you know, here we are as farmers, 1% of the population.
You mentioned the big lot feeds.
Yeah, like feedlots. Yeah.
And that doesn't happen either.
Pardon me?
You were going to defend that.
Oh, yeah. Just people hear the term factory farm, and it gives off this really negative connotation. But when you actually go inside them, it's incredible. Like, I really wish I could just take every listener and just take them on these farms because the technology where, you know, you can get a text message notification if your cow is about to give birth. You get an email notification if the feed isn't coming out just right. Or, you know, you get 100+ data tracking points on a cow to know how much milk she gave, how many steps she took, how many times she chewed her cud. The data to track and monitor health for livestock nowadays is just incredible. So it's heartbreaking when you see all this progress of being able to produce more food with less resources than ever before, completely eliminating so many antibiotics. And that is getting lost in the conversation. And it's so sad.
And it's, so are we still having people react to the way things used to be?
I think so. And our industry, in my opinion, our industry
needs a PR agent.
Yeah.
You're it.
Well, I'm trying. I'm here. But that's really kind of what I'm trying to do is we need to talk to people like you. We need to get celebrities and people with a big voice to understand us, because as of right now, I mean, I'm so beyond honored to be here because it's very frustrating. And farmers are wonderful, intelligent people, and the veterinarians and the animal welfare experts and everything, but they're not always the best communicators. Like, we don't have any celebrities in our corner. You know, it's hard. So that's been my thing and my goal to focus on, we need to stop talking to each other.
In a way, and this, again, I'm just riffing here. It reminds me of the anti-vaccine movement in that we're the beneficiaries of our success. People haven't seen illnesses.
Exactly.
They don't understand about herd immunity. They don't think it's necessary. So they can start picking apart all these little issues that are infinitely less important than the actual protection against these very serious diseases. And we are similarly spoiled in terms of our access to wonderful foods.
Yes, we are.
And we just assume, you know, that we'll always have that and it magically will appear, and then we can attack the people that produce it.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I know, we take so much for granted and there's so much to celebrate in our industry, but it's hard to sell the story of science. You know, I mean, like, it's not sexy. You know, what sells is the fear mongering and the right. story of saving the animals and, you know, donate to this charity that's going to save everybody. And it's like, well, animals are already, you know, saved and they're taken very well care of on farms, but how do you sell that? And our industry continues, in my opinion, continues to use the same, sorry guys, sorry my agricultural listeners, kind of boring, where it's like jangly guitar, you know, my dad was a farmer, my grandpa was a rancher, and it's a beautiful story, and we love our farmers and ranchers and their multi-generation farms, but it doesn't sell. So
it doesn't
hope,
reassure either.
I think our industry needs to do a better job of creating like fun and funny. Like, I don't know if you saw the video about nut milking where this guy was like, it was a parody.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
Did you see that? Yeah, where he's like the nut milk. Yeah. I mean, stuff like that, that had like 40 million views. So it's things that our industry really needs to think outside the box and get more creative with how we tell the story using humor and, you know, different than just talking about science or believing that the family farm is going to sell the story and everybody's right. going to understand us. You know what I mean? That's just my opinion.
Yeah, are there practices that should be modified?
That's a great question. I mean, there's always room for improvement.
I mean,
absolutely.
Like, I can't stand eating lamb. It bothers me.
Really?
Or veal.
Really? Oh my gosh. So there's some great myths to bust there too.
Go ahead, do it.
I am a lamb farmer.
Okay.
And lambs actually, when they go to market, are pretty much full grown. They weigh about 160 pounds. At least my breed do. They're different breed, way different. But yeah, I think sometimes people think of like snuggly little baby lambs.
Yes,
but,
that's what I assume.
Yeah, no, they look like a grown sheep. They're about 160 pounds and they go to market.
How old are they?
About 6 months.
Okay, so yeah, still pretty
young. Lamb is under a year is what constitutes lamb.
Yeah.
And then veal is also, I want to say they go to market around, is it like 9 or 10 months? And don't quote me on this. There's a really great blogger out there that does this. She raises veal, but I want to say they're like 700 pounds when they go to market. So I think sometimes people say, oh, it's just a snuggly little baby, you know.
But in our mind, we for sure, we
yeah,
do that.
Yeah,
700 pounds, reassuring.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, it's hard to
I understand.
Terminate at 6 months, 9 months, whatever.
Sure,
How long do beef usually live?
About 18 months or so, yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah.
It's not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
What's the life expectancy of a cow generally?
Of a cow?
In a natural environment.
Well, they're so domesticated, right?
Yeah.
I know dairy cow, I want to say they stopped producing milk around like 8 or 10 years old, something like that. Mm. I think their full life expectancy would maybe be like, I don't know, 12, 15 okay. years, something okay. like 50, I, and don't
like
quote me on, don't
like,
quote
like,
me
like
on
a
that.
Dog, essentially.
Yeah, I'm so involved in the meat side of things and they're so domestic that it's like, you know what I mean? So
what do you mean they're so domestic?
Well, they're just such a domesticated animal, you know? So it's like, I don't think people really always stop and think about that. But because we're so efficient, here's a fun fact. we're so efficient as American livestock producers that the carbon footprint of all of livestock production in the U.S. is only about 4% of GHG emissions. Yeah.
So what about that whole movement?
So that's another thing, right?
Yeah.
Is there's so much misinformation out there where people are trying to paint this picture of livestock are destroying the planet, but the statistics have been so debunked, or they've been taken from retracted reports or outdated reports. There's a famous one that I won't mention because I won't give it any publicity, but it came out in 2006. Now, there's several wonderful scientists out there that actually study this sort of thing. There's Frank Mitlohner. He's at GHG Guru on Twitter. And then there's Dr. Sarah Place. And they're wonderful people that study this. I was just at the University of Kentucky last week, actually, in the research lab in the animal science department, learning about how they measure methane. And so they're constantly finding ways and doing research to see how can we mitigate this even more. So it's really interesting because if you look at the actual EPA statistics, all of agriculture is only 9%. Livestock is about 4.4% of that. So there's a lot of hyperbole, overblown statistics out there. Again, these animal rights activists are creating these videos and telling these stories. They're trying to sell these fake meat products. And so, you know, there's a lot of noise that isn't always backed in science.
What was Ocasio-Cortez talking about the other day about rotating crops or something? Did you see – can you find this, Gary?
I don't.
She was walking around talking about why do you put cauliflower in? You should alternate it with some other plant that's indigenous to somewhere.
Well – Can she come visit us on the farm? Can you come visit us on the farm? Can we get all these people to come visit us on farms?
Yeah, I would wish.
You know, and
I'm sorry, I'm not sure.
Was it
regenerative
Twitter
maybe?
Twitter thing, and it was like a week ago, maybe 4 or 5 days ago, and she was walking around screaming about cauliflower, if you just
that's
look
funny.
Up, I can maybe even find it. It might have been an Instagram or it was some social media post. But I didn't have any idea what she was talking about or what it meant.
Oh, AOC?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like crop rotation is definitely beneficial if you can do it, right? Not all crops can do that. But I mean, yeah, we practice that on our farm.
She was talking about repeating the same crops repeatedly and somehow that was...
Sure. If you can, there's some truth to that. I mean, if you can rotate certain crops and do it. I mean, for example, we rotate...
But you would do that automatically because you're interested in preserving your land.
Exactly. Right. And different... crops put different nutrients back in the soil. So when we rotate corn and soy, for example, you have different levels of nitrogen. Like if you go from corn as a grass and soy as a legume. So if you rotate those, they're putting different nutrients back in the soil, different root systems. And so it's beneficial. I mean, farmers want to do that. It cuts down on your inputs, your fertilizer, it cuts down on pest pressure. I mean, there's a million reasons to do that. So that's another myth I think that drives us farmers crazy is the whole monoculture myth. Because it's like, yeah, we don't really want to do that. Like the
monoculture.
Monoculture.
What is that?
It's the practice of growing the same crop over and over.
I think that's what she was talking
about. Yeah, yeah.
Look up monoculture.
And, oh, that's such a myth, and it just drives me bonkers. Like the real myths or the real monocultures would be like a tree or a vineyard, right? Because
yeah.
You can't just dig out a tree every year. You know,
vineyards, you want them to stay for a
exactly.
Long time.
Yeah. So it's funny because there's
technically nuts would be a monoculture.
Sure. Yeah, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's just. Farmers have cultivated these crops. They have become experts at growing this. And if you can rotate, like we can rotate, as people say, oh, GMOs cause monoculture. No, it's the opposite. It's GMOs that allow us to rotate more crops.
Well, it's got to drive you crazy because I've never really had a strong opinion about agriculture because I don't know anything about it. I'm not an expert in that. I shouldn't be telling you how to do your business.
Right.
There are experts out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in my business where people are – you know, like Adam always says, if a carpenter comes in and says, here's, I'm going to swing the door, the person doesn't start taking issue with how the carpenter does
exactly.
Their job.
Exactly.
But medicine, agriculture, they
oh,
want to tell
yes.
you how to do it. It's
exactly.
Weird.
It's so true.
It's so bizarre.
I know. It's so true. And it's. I'm trying to do more by talking to the medical community too, because I keep saying like we keep talking to each other in agriculture. And it's like, no, like we need to talk to health and wellness and medical. You know, doctors are sitting here going, well, everybody needs to eat organic because they don't use chemicals. Well, that's another myth. I mean, organic can totally use pesticides.
Okay,
you know?
Hold on with that. Gary, do you have that for me?
I'm trying to read several. You know how polarizing she is. So yeah. I've certainly read a couple articles that say that she's basically claiming that planting cauliflower is racist.
Yes. Oh my God, I heard about that. Okay, yeah.
I definitely don't think that's what her case is. I'm finding more, you know, articles that are on her side of the aisle that are talking about how she was pointing to a specific plant that was being planted in New York, and it's. What she was saying about colonialization is basically that plant that she was referencing is not indigenous to New York and doesn't thrive in the culture that has cold. It's used to a humid year-round.
Does that matter?
Well, I'm no cauliflower expert.
Yeah. She was actually speaking about something called yucca, which is...
Yucca is what she wanted to be planted instead of cauliflower.
Right. Oh, interesting.
And that's the one that requires the warm, humid, whatever.
So, okay, gotcha. Well, so here's where you say, you know what? I don't know. And more people need to do a better job at saying that, because everybody, like you said, wants to be an expert because they read something on the internet. I don't know the first damn thing about yucca. How about that?
Yeah.
I do know that we're very fortunate here in California because the agriculture in this state is so amazingly diverse. And you've got, you know, Salinas. I've been up there to the cauliflower fields and learned about how that was grown and harvested. And that's cool. You know, when you go to a 55,000 acre produce farm that supplies the vegetables for Costco and McDonald's and Walmart. I mean, that's pretty neat. And it's a very, very efficient. I wish everybody could go take tours because, and we all know, or like most of us probably know, like a fun hobby farmer at your farmer's market that has like 5 acres and they've got a cool, like fun little agritourism thing, which is so wonderful. But we don't stop and think about like, wait, where does our coffee come from? Like, I've become such a food waste Nazi now because it's like, don't dump that coffee down the drain. It was probably picked, hand-picked by somebody that was making like $2 an hour. And we food waste, like, can we please focus on smaller portions, less food waste?
It is unbelievable how much we waste.
Oh, we waste so much. Yeah. And if we would just stop and think about how that head of cauliflower was cut by somebody by hand, like an immigrant worker, and they work so hard, and we just let it rot and throw it away, and it's crazy.
Is that – it feels like that's a very political – should be a political movement attached to that.
Right?
Yeah.
It should be.
I mean, that's
save the cauliflower. Let's get AOC on that.
And then what are the farmers, people that are immigrants or illegal immigrants or
no,
the
not
workers?
Not illegal. No, that's another big myth.
Yeah.
No, it's actually very difficult to get immigrant workers, like especially here in California. From what I know, from what I understand, and I'm no expert on this topic, but from who I've talked to, especially here in California, the rules are especially strict. They have to prove. So many steps were taken to hire locally, to hire Americans, to hire this. And then they have the H-2A program, which is how you bring in, say, immigrants from Mexico. Ridiculous amount of paperwork and expenses. They are actually treated pretty well. They're protected pretty well by these regulations where you've got to be able to provide them housing or childcare. I mean, especially up in Salinas, where I'm specifically talking about.
Okay, that's good to hear.
When you see how well they're – oh, there's a ton of rules protecting them. Now, we do need to maintain a good relationship with Mexico because we do depend on them for labor in agriculture.
Oh, that's interesting. Is this new agreement with Canada and Mexico going to affect any of that, do you know?
I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe in a positive way, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we want to talk politics, I'd need another 7 hours.
Of course. I'm sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms of just. And that's what I'm trying to do is just.
So we hear, you know, soy farmers are going to have trouble because of China.
Oh, God, it's been awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really tough for farmers right now. And I am a big fan of buying local, right? If you can support your small neighborhood community farm, that's wonderful because they're going to make more money. That can make or break a farm sometimes because profitability, I mean, we deal with razor thin margins, you know? So that's another thing that goes along with livestock, right? It's like if you got a sick animal, you are going to do everything in your power to save it because you can't afford to lose them. And some of these medications are so expensive, you know? And it's like we can't afford to have our herd go down in flames. We can't afford them to be sick. And you have to prevent it.
As long as we're sort of
vaccines, everything. Yeah.
Moving towards politics is the subsidies to farming that people get, like that, you know, gigantic warehouses of cheese that never get eaten, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? You hear about these things.
Yeah, yeah. So
how's that? I'm sure each one is a different program.
But, yeah, they are. Yeah. And it's funny because you hear about the farm bill.
Yeah.
And something like 85 or 89% of the farm bill is actually going to food stamps and SNAPs and welfare programs for food. So that's another myth I think that drives me crazy is when people say, oh, farmers are just getting all this government money and subsidies.
Well, let's talk
about
it because there's $15 billion going to soy farmers now.
Right.
Is that to sustain them because they would go out of business without it?
Yeah. I think that's a pretty fair statement because with the tariffs now, and if you search the hashtag trade not aid, farmers don't want to be bailed out. Like, we don't want government money. We just want a fair shake. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, we have no control over markets. We have no control over operating costs. I mean, the equipment's got to be run, you know, and the seed cost is high and everything is, it's so expensive to run a farm. You got to lease your land. You got to pay for
labor,
all your inputs, labor,
equipment.
everything. So you can spend easily over $1 million a year in inputs and then you could make $950,000, right? So you'd be making negative $50,000
for that
year.
It would be easy for that to happen, it seems
to me. Yeah.
These margins are so thin.
Yeah. And so right now, a big reason due to tariffs, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but a big reason is due to tariffs, you know, and rumor has it, and I don't think it's officially been announced yet, but rumor has it, you know, soybean growers are going to get like an extra $2 per bushel, which will make us barely break even, you know? So you've got all these myths out there. Oh, these farmers are just getting all this government money and handouts, and it's, you know, they're just getting rich off the government. We're like, no.
I'm trying to think
that's to keep your food affordable and keep us in business so you can eat.
Yeah,
like,
again,
it's a big deal.
I'm coming from a place of ignorance, so forgive me if the questions are truly ignorant. But I'm trying to think of all the things that people cast.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah.
You're covering them all. Thank you.
Oh, good. Okay. Because it always seemed sort of unfair to me. And from a place of lack of experience, because you don't really know something unless you've experienced it. You can't just read about it on the internet. So I'm thinking about the next thing that I hear is let's put it under the label of industrialization, the concentration of large groups of large industries of agriculture. What about that?
Sure. So that's another term that drives us a little bonkers, like the whole industrial big egg.
Yeah,
like it
yeah.
makes it sound like we're just this big, blank, faceless corporation of a business.
I'm trying to think about the public's perception. I get where that would be upsetting to you, but it's more that it feels dangerous or unresponsive. It's like it's this big giant thing
crazy.
Producing food, spewing out stuff.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
Huge
amounts of animals. You hear about
God.
Massive productions.
Right, right.
Then I start thinking about my chickens on the conveyor belt. Anyway,
I don't know what you're talking about. Chickens are not raised on conveyor belts.
Gary, you got to find that picture.
But I do think it's funny when you hear like farm-raised chicken on like a television commercial. And it's like, where do you think chicken comes from? Like, our chickens are raised on the main streets of Philly. So it's like, well, where do you think it comes from? Chickens are raised in barns.
What about the big
large
industrial?
Barns.
These what you hear about this large? Oh, Gary's got.
You really want this up there? You told me 20 minutes ago not to do it.
Oh no, I want to see it. I want to see it.
Is it babies? Is it chicks?
No, it's chickens on like they're hanging upside down on like.
Are they already dead?
No.
Okay.
But it literally looks like what they use like in when you go to a cleaner's with the clothing on those gigantic.
Oh yeah, I see exactly what you're talking about, but most of the videos of that are already dead chickens.
Yeah,
oh,
they should be already dead.
Maybe they're already
they look
dead.
Like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Maybe they're already dead.
And that's another fun fact.
They made
is
it look
that,
like they're alive. So
yeah, no, they wouldn't be alive.
That's
but that would be how they're inspected or cleaned or processed.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty common thing.
That's
yeah.
not so
yeah.
troubling.
Yeah. No, they wouldn't be alive. That would definitely be. And that's another thing that the industry has become so good at is making the – can I just say another thing I hate about agriculture's PR is the word slaughter. Like it just sounds bad, like industrial big egg and slaughter. Like, where are the slaughterhouse and GMO? Even. Like, where the hell are these terms even coming from?
Well, slaughterhouse kind of looks like what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, all the blood everywhere.
That's what you picture.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I mean, a majority of them are gassed. Like, they're literally just put to sleep. Mm. And that's how it's done nowadays, is they go in, they fall asleep, and they come out. It's no different than people saying, I put my cat to sleep. Mm-hmm. I put my dog to sleep. But instead, people think, but see, your pets get put to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Livestock go to slaughter.
Right.
It's like, where the hell are these terms coming from?
Well, it's what happens to them after they're dead. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, everything dies. You're going to die. I'm going to die. My cat's going to die. My cow's going to die. Just so happens that one of those things.
No one's going to eat me.
Exactly. One of those things comes with a recipe.
though, right.
And it's not you.
Actually a weird prohibition. But anyway.
Yeah. But getting back to your point, though, about, like industrialization, right? I mean, agriculture is an industrial sized business. And for people to try to paint that as a negative thing, I think is something more so that should be celebrated.
I don't imagine something the size of your and your husband's. You know what I mean? That, to me, it's in the more technological and industrious farm that size, it sounds romantic. But we imagine gigantic institutions. Is there such a thing?
Well, sure. And I'd be happy to take you to one.
Several. What do they look like? What are they like?
So there's actually one in my neighborhood that I love to go to. And it's they raise 800,000 pigs per year.
Okay. So pig farms is one of the big ones.
In Iowa. Yeah. We're the number one producer of pork in the country. Yeah. And so it's a family farm. I mean, it is a multi-generation family farm. And I can say that when you meet these people, they are the quintessential farmer that you would picture. They're the same people. It's just that they have become good at their jobs to the point where they can expand. And for you to build one of these barns in Iowa, raising animals indoors is very important. We have negative 20 degrees in the winter. We have blizzards. You can't raise animals outdoors year round because the waters freeze. Just for obvious reasons.
These 800,000, so do they
get raised indoors? Yeah.
Do they get to go outside?
No, they wouldn't. No. But you know, again, you have biosecurity in place. So when you go in, you shower in, so you don't bring in any diseases or bacteria.
Shower?
Yes.
Going into a pig farm?
Yes, because you cannot bring in any disease or risk any sort of bacteria, which is actually funny enough. This happens in mushroom farms too, which I don't think people always think about. Yeah.
Interesting.
So you can decimate an entire mushroom crop. You can decimate an entire pig barn if you bring in that one disease, right? So yeah, I mean, you shower in, you have biosecurity, the animals are vaccinated, and this is how we're able to raise them with no antibiotics ever, is because of the science saying.
But don't they get autism?
Right. But it's cool. So if you think about how much money this farm has invested in these buildings, let's say $10 million to build this. Think about that ROI. You know, why would you spend, first of all, why would you spend $10 million if you weren't going to drastically improve your herd or flock based on the scientific evidence? But secondly, you know, to have your ROI and to get bigger, and if you're going to spend that kind of money, you have to raise that kind of money to make money. I mean, it's a business. We're in the business to hopefully make money,
right?
Which is also tied into politics, unfortunately. But so I mean, if you think about it, there's less than 2% of farmers are less than 2% of the population are farmers. So,
and what percentage are the large farmers?
Well, that's a good question. Of the
1%, sure.
It is measured. Yeah, it's on the USDA website, and I forget the number off the top of my head. I want to say this too, is that by me talking about large scale agriculture in like a more positive light than people are used to, by no way am I putting down like a small farmer, right? Like, but and that's great if you can buy from your local community farmer.
You've
that's
said
awesome.
That a couple times, yeah.
But also, I just want people to realize that if you need to buy the cheap meat, and if you're buying something that's like one of the big brands, you're probably still buying a really awesome product.
And when you responded to me on Twitter, you said factory farming, 99% of farms are family owned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a little confused because you said that big giant pig farm is a family owned.
It is. Yeah, it's owned by a family.
So is that in that 99%?
Yes.
Even though it's big?
Yeah. It's the farmer's values haven't changed. It's just technology has allowed us to produce more with fewer resources.
Give me 5 minutes on farmer's values.
Oh,
what
well,
does that mean?
5 minutes on farmers' values. Well,
three or four minutes.
I think if you just think about the family farm and where they came from and where they want to go and how you live where you work and how they're multi-generation and you want to raise your kids where you are and you're going to do everything in your power to pass that on, you know? And
but is it the value of the attachment to the land, to the
sure
the animal husbandry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All of that. I mean, it's such a big part of who you are and it's such a tight-knit community. And you know, you hear all these stories of loss. You know, we're at the mercy of Mother Nature. You know, even on our farm, a tornado went through 2 years ago and took out half our buildings. And I mean, it was pretty devastating.
Crazy.
Yeah, but then, and it happens to the neighbors and you hear about drought and flooding and you hear about all these farmers coming together to help the community. And it really is a sense of family, community, people coming together to help each other. And it's a nice, refreshing sense of pride and community. And I think more people need to understand that, you know, that these faces of industrial big ag are still great family farmers who just happen to have grown their business, you know, and they have chosen to take on more risk and to do that. And we've got
the value of community and support.
Family.
How about with the, again, I'm trying to get more of a sense of what the connection to the land and the animals is.
Sure. Just, I don't think you would ever find a farmer say, I work with animals every day because I don't like them. You know, you hear about even now with the dairy industry.
Do you ever get excessively attached to a particular animal?
Sure, once in a while. Yeah, yeah. There's always like your favorite one in the flock, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes you a good farmer, though, too. You know, it's like even when I grew up hunting and I'd shoot a deer and then cry, my dad would say, well, you know, it's sacrifice. It's like part of what we do.
We're going to send you to the Fashion Institute.
Stop. Don't hold that against me. If you would have asked me that someday I'd be talking about this as a career, my college self definitely would have laughed. But I guess that's why I'm so passionate about this too. You know, is when you go from...
You come from a different perspective.
Yeah, too. Exactly. Yeah. And so I hear these concerns and it's like, whoa, I get it. I had those same concerns. But I would love to have you on a farm or just like, you know, any celebrities and whoever. It's like, come on out. Like, we're happy to open our barn doors for you. We just have to make sure that we can trust people, kind of like what Gary was saying earlier with like these ag gag laws. It's like, no, like we're more than happy to talk about it and let you in. We just have to make sure you're not like some crazy activist that's just trying to put together a video. Mm-hmm. So we've got to protect ourselves. It's our family, right? You want to go back to the family values. Here we go. Go back to the fact that land has been in our family for my boyfriend's family, right? For six generations.
Well, and when you think about it, how many thousands of people were sustained? Because
yes, exactly. And so you have
human
this,
lives sustained.
Exactly.
Without it, we die.
Mm-hmm, and it's just amazing. Every day is different. And you just get to, I mean, a lot of people in agriculture are religious. So they look at it as a connection to God, a connection to the earth. And I don't think there's any better, I don't think there's any better feeling than that.
Well, why don't we leave it right there? I think we covered. Did we cover everything?
I think we've covered. Yeah. I mean, I think just, yeah, food labels and just having people just connect to talk to farmers and scientists about farming and science, you know?
Let's have them start by talking to the Farm Babe. So go to the website, thefarmbabe.com, and can they submit questions and react
absolutely
to your stuff? Follow her on @thefarmbabe on Twitter and Instagram. The YouTube channel, what happens there?
So I don't do a lot on YouTube, but it is youtube.com/thefarmbabe. And I've got a few videos up there, nothing crazy. And then my Facebook page is where I do most of my outreach is just if you just search Farm Babe on Facebook. Then I'm also do public speaking and just try to do some bridging that gap.
And you do a weekly column on agdaily.com.
Agdaily.com, yes. So between writing and speaking and farming and all sorts of stuff, it keeps me busy, but it's what I love and happy to be here.
Thank you for coming out. We appreciate
thank
it.
You.
I know
thank
it's you. You made a big effort to get here and I'm glad I responded to you. And
yes,
it's interesting
thank you.
And it's something I know very little about and mm-hmm. yet
my life depends upon it, like all of us.
Yes, yes. So. If you ate today and you wear clothes and you used a towel and you slept in sheets and you walked in carpeting, I mean, agriculture is all around us. And we're
spoiled and blessed in this country with a profound system.
Exactly. So I love to give them a bigger voice.
All right. Awesome. Well, we'll look for Michelle Miller out there and all those addresses we just gave you. And thank you guys all for listening. We'll see you next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DRDREW Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or DrDrew.com.